This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
We returned to the five pillars yesterday. And pointed to the first pillar, familiarity towards your meditation. And pointed to the fact that it was about becoming familiar, not about learning. But learning to become familiar, learning to be comfortable with where our meditation will lead, which is to a sense of stillness and openness, awareness, silence, all different words pointing to the same experience, and how we need to get familiar, get used to, grow into, trust that sense of nothingness, there isn't anybody there. And that takes some learning, that takes some getting used to. And like I say, to trust. And here we get the silence of silent illumination. So those two blend together, they're not different at all. But it's the silence which is the bedrock of this training, and it's the environment for change or insight. It's where the jewels of insight are to be discovered in that silence, where there isn't anybody, there isn't anything. And this is your true nature. This is not the conditioned mind, because you've managed to let that go. Suspend your conditioned mind and discovered that other part of you that isn't conditioned. And that's touching your true nature. So you see how close you are. Buddha nature is not so far away, is it? It's not something that's over there somewhere or even buried that deep. We actually live out of it moment by moment, but we don't realise. So Buddha nature doesn't have to be a great mystery, although its depths is a great mystery, but in terms of touching, it's very close. But this is the silence of silent illumination. And once we arrive there, then we're on the threshold of insight, threshold of getting to know who we are, and getting to know what is beyond that person that we are consumed by. But as we all know, this is not an easy place to find. But the greatest commitment that we can have, it's still something that's unusual, rare. Even if you touch it, it's not easy to come back to it. And we need to ask ourselves why. Why can I not pull off what is actually the simplest thing that could ever be asked of me? There's nothing complicated about this. It is beyond simplicity. One plus one is simple. It doesn't take a lot to learn what one plus one equals. We can learn that very quickly when we're a small child. That's simple. But here there isn't anything. It's beyond simple. It's simple, simple. And yet we can't with the greatest will in the world, or the greatest non-will in the world, it is a huge thing for us to experience. So we need to ask ourselves, why? Why can I not do the simplest thing this simplicity? Why can I not simply pull it off? And this makes you look upon the busyness, the agitation of the mind and the body and the whole of who you are. You begin to see that in order to be still, every part of you needs to be still. And yet when you look at yourself in the round, you see that actually you're not still. In fact, you're never still, actually. There may be some bits of you that are still from time to time, but the whole of you, it requires all of you to be still, physically, emotionally, and mentally, in order to find that environment. And so we need to be alive to the fact of what we call restlessness, that where we're not still, where we're moving, we're agitated, jumping around. And of course the mind is the primary part of us that's restless. That ultimately the bits that got to go is got to be quiet so that we can find this still environment. But also physically and emotionally, and this is why we train ourselves, we come to the cushion, we take on meditation. And we embark upon a mission of learning to be still. We have to be physically still to meditate, irrespective of the subject, the theme. It requires you to learn to be physically still. And yet, even that's a massive challenge, isn't it? Even that we can't do easily, at least not for more than a few moments. We can all be still for a few minutes, maybe. But to be still for a good period of time, we soon discover how difficult even that is on that physical level. But we need to train ourselves, and that is doable. And for some of us, it can take literally years. For some, we just to sit on the cushion, never mind the mind. Forget that bit. Just to sit on the cushion and cross our legs or kneel and to be still without moving is a huge challenge. Some of us just find it, just the frustration, the build-up of frustration of being still, of even if it's just, oh, I've got an itch, I've got to scratch. Oh, there's another itch there, I must scratch. I must fiddle with my hands a bit. Do just move around. Just the frustration of being still. How difficult that is to tame on a physical level. And that's the easy bit. And so you see, we are in a permanent state of agitation. We cannot be still. And yet, for us Dhamma practitioners, the primary focus is learning to be still. So we can train ourselves to be still on the cushion. We can put it off after a while, however long that may take. And there's so much resistance in the body. But also, what is making it difficult for us to be still physically is the emotional reaction that we will get. The emotions that will come up again. Emotions don't do stillness. Emotions have to be active, have to be doing, have to be moving. However they may manifest, but they are moving. Emotions just don't sit still. There's an energy, and you've got to be doing something. Whatever. Just on a small level like this, never mind bigger animations. So we have to train train the emotions to be still too, and that's where you get your the frustration of being still. But it's doable. But you know how long even that can take. Because really the emotions and the physical body, really they come as one really in that regard. But you can pull it off. But then we come to the mind and the restlessness of the mind, and that's of a different order altogether, isn't it? But somehow we have to rise to that challenge. Hopefully we're doing all three at the same time. We don't do them in sequence, but we actually tackle them all. But the thing is to become alive. Why can I not be still? This is not a small subject, and yet it's mundane. It's a mundane, the thing called restless is a very mundane word. It's something that everybody experiences and everybody will have a comment about. So there's nothing esoteric about restlessness. There's nothing Buddhist about restlessness. It's something that we all experience and we can all have a view on. So I think in many ways this is why this feature, this part of us, seems to go unnoticed so much in Dharma training. It's not a subject that's given a lot of attention to, not picked up on its own and spoken about like this. I don't get that. I really don't get that. I know it's mundane, but that, until we get to know that, and why can I not be still? Not only why can I not be still, but can I do something about it? That is a big, big subject, because it's only in stillness do you see. It's only in stillness that wisdom arises. You have to learn that stillness. Even stillness in activity, ultimately, because it's about the mind being still, and you can be walking, you can be engaging with people, engaging with life. This isn't about shutting the door on life. Engaging with life, and yet there is a steadfastness, there's an inner stillness there that can shine through, even through activity. Another word for stillness is samadhi. Well, this is samadhi in action. Our samadhi isn't about samadhi of stillness, of being physically still and shut off. Our samadhi is about embracing life and living life, and yet having stillness within that activity. That's where this is going. Because it's in the wholeness of life do we get to know who we are in the round, and begin to open up and to know life and to know the world in which we live. We don't shut life down. We embrace it, and yet within that embrace, we have to find stillness. That's the challenge. And we don't have stillness because we're restless. Therefore, we have to know about restlessness. And what can I do? Acknowledge this thing called restlessness, that it's not just a mundane thing, but it's actually a massive block on the path for us. Not only that, but what can I do about it? Yes, on the cushion you can. Obviously, you're confronted with it head on. And so you deal with it head on through learning to be still, and then learning to let your thoughts go, not chase your thoughts when they come, when the restless mind manifests, as it's continually doing, is that when you bring awareness, when you bring that aliveness, which is not a part of that agitation, that's why you can see and observe them, because that observer is not a part of the agitation. The agitation can certainly blind, but once that steadfastness begins to come and begins to take some root, you can be on guard to the restless mind, because that guard is not a part of the restless. That guard is who you really are. The restless mind is a fantasy, is a dream, is a concoction that is continually creating. But that part of you that observe is not a part of that. And that's where, this is where change takes place. But we need to have that observing steadfastness, present with us as much as we possibly can, on the cushion and off the cushion. On the cushion, it's much more doable, but sooner or later we have to learn to take it off the cushion. So we have an aliveness and awareness in all of our actions, because that aliveness, that awareness is not your samsara, is not your conditioned mind. It's easily covered when the thoughts come. You lose it. But it's actually there all the time, like the sun that shines permanently. Even when it's cloudy, the sun is shining, but we don't see it. But that doesn't mean, because we don't see it, doesn't mean the sun isn't there anymore, that it's died, that it's vanished. Of course it's not. It's actually still behind the clouds, but we don't experience the sun. That's the same with who we really are. It's there permanently, but we throw clouds over it, so we lose it. So, in order for liberation, in order to get to know that sense of steadfastness needs to be with us as much as we possibly can nurture it. And this is all about degrees. This isn't flicking a switch on and off. It is not like that. You don't have to be perfectly aware all the time for this to work, for change to take place. Because if that were the case, none of us would be free. It's all about your commitment, and it's nurture and nurture and nurture. And don't make judgments about that. But we need to look, why, what can I do? Look, this is number one priority here. This stillness is this is what this is all about. It's learn to let go of the agitation. And so, and see, you can give attention to your restlessness on the cushion and how difficult it is just to be physically still, and how the frustration that you want to move, and like I was saying, finding an excuse to blow your nose or to put your hands over your face or to knock the fly off or to anything to scratch. Always justify it, but always allowing yourself to fall into that trap when we need as much as possible to be completely still. This is the silence, to be silent. The subtlety of that silence. So we need to look at our, what we call restlessness. It's obvious on the cushion. But in order, you know, what we have to realise, in order to bring that stillness, to experience that stillness on the cushion, you can't just walk through the door having a life of just no stillness. I've been busy, continually caught up, physically, mentally caught up. Or you have no space in your life, which is so common in our culture. We are so caught by so many things. You can't just have that life and then come through that door and then go like that and expect it all to stop. It's not going to happen. You're going to bring that restlessness with you, and then you're going to really struggle when you're on the cushion. And then, why can't I do this meditation? When you say you can't do meditation, it means you can't be still. You're all over the, you know, you're not still. You're all over the place. That's when you say you can't do this meditation, because when you're still, you get a different experience altogether. Then you say, well, now I'm meditating, and I really like this, because for those moments, you've tamed restlessness. So in order to fulfill the need to be still on the cushion, we have to look ourselves in the round. Our training isn't about the cushion, it's about the four postures, it's the whole of our life. And therefore we need to acknowledge that we're continually on the move, and then look at our lives. And this is where this training can have a massive effect on your life, change your life. All the habits that you've had, all the things that you continually chase, it makes you look at these things. If you want to do this, if you want to pull this off, if you want to get this to maximise the potential here, You need to look at your life and see how you're never still. Always engaging, always producing, always totally goal orientated all the time. I'm doing this to get that, and on the move. Whatever, all different levels. Well, it's not just about work. It's relation. It's everything. It's everything. Everything we do. We don't have to put things in boxes here. It's just to see that how the busyness, especially in our culture, we've all got things to do. We've all got to be productive, which is what we learned from when we're a child in this culture, to be productive. Don't waste a minute of your time. This is what we, and that is a conditioning. All that busyness, all that need to produce, be productive, don't waste your time, all of that. There's nothing natural about any of it. Don't you believe it? We take it as being that's the way that it is. It's not at all. It is absolutely not. That is a conditioning. You were not born with that. You were not born with that as your natural state. That is called conditioning. And we've got it big time in our culture, big time, in the material world. To be successful in the material world, you've got to be busy. That's the way it is. If you're not busy, you will not be successful. And we're conditioned as to be an individual and to get out there and conquer the world. And that means to be active, to be doing, to be goal-orientated, to be in a permanent state of agitation. That's what us Western people, and I think we carry it far, far more than Eastern, but certainly historically. People didn't have these things in certainly less developed cultures, this material goals, these material goals. So we have all of this, and it's what we're brought up from when we're children. We're brought up and we come here and then we walk through the door and we come here, and then we wonder why we can't do the meditation, why it's so difficult for us. Well, there you are, there you know why. Because you've been taught to be on the go the whole time. And yet this is about not on the go at all, this is about stopping. There you can see why it's such a struggle for us, and how so many of us can't hack it. You do this for 5 minutes and then you wander off, oh, I can't do that. In fact, most people, if you told them to sit down and to meditate, they would say, oh, no, I can't do that. Oh, you're joking. What do you mean? You can't just sit down and be still for a few minutes. Oh, no, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. Most people, the majority of people will tell you that. Not some people, the majority. That's the state that we've got ourselves into. That's not natural what they do. They weren't born with those with that characteristic. It's what we've been taught. It's been hammered into us that this is how you live your life. This is what you do. Well, that's the world. That's the worldly life. That's the worldly mind. But this is not the worldly mind, and we've got to realise that. So therefore, we need to look at ourselves and look at our lives and what can I do to just calm the thing down a bit. So when I come to my meditation cushion, I'm sort of halfway there at least. I'm not 1,000 miles away from that place of stillness. At least I'm several steps closer to it. So therefore, when I get there, it's not going to be an impossible thing to experience. So it makes you look at your life. If you're serious about this, and if you want to be agitated, if you want to be ambitious, And on the go all the time and fill every moment of your life. Oh, don't waste a moment of your life. When the space comes in your life, find something to put in there, something to do, so you're not wasting your time. Don't think that that's natural. But that's what we do. And if you do that, don't expect this to go to any great depth, as it were, or to any great degree. Somehow you've got to be able to take control of your life and learn to look at it in the round. And if as I describe it, is the way that it is. How can I slow the thing down? How can I create spaces in my life? Yes, I've got this and that to do, and I've got commitments, which means I've got to do these things, even if I don't want to do them. Dharma isn't about hurting others for your own desires. We don't hurt others. So if you find that, you know, you have to work and you have to do this and well, that's the way it is. But you need to look at that and see, is it possible to create space around it? Do I need to be on the go all the time? When suddenly I find myself on those occasions when I've got nothing to do, do I have to then to find something to put in that space? And for us, you say no. You actually welcome these spaces. These are not times of wasted time, but actually, in dharmic terms, these are very productive times. That you learn to let go, you learn to create a space, and you learn to be with yourself. Because when you're not busy, that's where you are. You're with yourself. You're not anywhere else. Actually, is that you're with yourself. Where else can you be when you're not caught up with doing things, agitating? Where else can you be but with yourself? And is that not the key why we're always busy? Is because most of us don't want to be with ourselves, if the truth be known. This is why we on the go the whole time, so we can avoid being with parts of ourselves that we don't want to be with. So we're always busy. Well, for us people, we can't play that game. We got to begin to turn away from that and decondition ourselves and create space, because if you want to know, then you've got to be with yourself. It's no good you being busy and out there, being lost, and expect liberation. You've got to come to be with yourself, be right with yourself, be open to yourself, and see and know, find the stillness, the clarity. Develop the mirror-like quality that's looking and seeing and knowing, and there you'll come into the threshold of change. So you can't be running around like a mad ass all the time. And when space comes to your life, be grateful for it. Rejoice. What's the word? Rejoice. Ooh, look, I've got nothing to do for the next hour. Isn't that fantastic? I'm just going to sit down and be with myself, look out the window, say hello to myself, be with myself. Let this other stuff go that I have to be involved with, that's the way it is. But I'm finding space for myself. That's a skillful means that we begin to bring to our life, begin to address this thing called restlessness, that is not a small impediment. It is massive, and I don't know why this is not spoken about more often. I really don't know why, because this is big. We need to look at our life and to hone our life if we're serious about this, and take stock and be honest. What can I do in my life to bring more space, to lessen the agitation and the massive grasping and the running and the goal and the ambition, to rein it all in, so that we can become ever more still, be ever more with ourselves, so that when we walk through the door, it's just a small step to take to the stillness that we can find on the cushion, and in that place of stillness, the silence. Is where we meet our true nature. And when we meet our true nature, we can see into who we are, and the whole process of transforming can take place. So that we need to look at this thing called restlessness and see and be absolutely honest with ourselves. Can we even hack not being restless? I mean, it seems such a daft thing to say, but, you know, like I say, when people find that there's a gap in their lives, oh, quick, find something to do. You know, oh, no, I can't not do anything. And of course, the bottom line with all of that is, can you be on your own? And what we do when we're active all the time is that we're avoiding the basic existential reality of the human condition, and it is a condition, or the conditioning is this sense of separateness and the sense of loneliness. And that is the most difficult thing to face up to. And so we do our best to avoid that by being busy. So when you become still, you're inviting that experience of being separate and that sense of loneliness. And do you want to do that? Do you want to go there? Because if you're doing this training, you have to be prepared to go there. Because that is the bottom line with all of this. We feel separate. And we feel lonely. And that's what we have to address. What's the reality of that? Why am I like this? Is this natural, or is this something that's created? Is it something that can be uncreated? Well, it is, actually. Because the truth is that we're not separate. We're not separate from each other. We are all at one. But we've managed to get ourselves into a state where we've divorced ourselves, created a space between me and the world and others. Of course you're going to feel lonely. But that's something that you've created. And therefore you can uncreate it. But the way you uncreate it is that you be with it, confront it, as it were. You face up to it. And the way that you face up to it is that you don't make yourself busy all the time, so you're avoiding yourself. That you can't do on the cushion. That's why so many of us can't even do this. Can't even be with ourselves. We can, to a certain degree, but can you take it off on more subtle levels, out into your life, and feel like, you know, oh, everybody's having a good time, they're all out doing this, that, and the other, and here I am in the house all on my own, feeling all lonely. We've all had that one. And so what you go to the phone and try and, oh, I'm not doing anything tomorrow night, go and find somebody to go out and do something with so that you feel you're a part of everything. You don't feel separate. Desperately trying to connect, desperately trying to connect and avoid that fundamental thing that sits, that darkness that sits with all of us, called loneliness. Well, if you're busy, you're never going to come face to face with it, because busyness is what we do to avoid it. But until you come face to face with it, this is where change takes place. Because it's all about you feeling separate from how things are. But it's about mending that delusion that we create for ourselves. So you have to be really honest. You have to look at your life and you know, can I not just find space where I'm not doing anything and just be with myself? And when that sense of loneliness comes up, can I sit with it? Learn to sit with it as best you can, because it's a horrible experience, as I'm sure all of us know. And the more you're prepared to sit with it and not run away from it, the more horrible it will probably get, at least in the short term. But it's only by sitting with it and looking at it and being with it and open up to it, look it in the face, that's the only way it's going to change. That's called fear. You are terrified of being lonely and of being separate. And the only way to deal with fear is to turn around and look at it in the face and stay with it. Don't feed it by reacting, by running away. That's it. That's the bottom line. And it's a huge challenge, because that the fear that we've generated, that darkness that we all have inside of us, is immense. It is immense. Never underestimate it. And never show it disrespect, because it's immense. But what you do is that you learn to approach it in a skillful way and learn to deal with it in a skillful way, little by little, layer by layer. And we begin to approach that challenge, if you like, by learning to see the agitation, the way that we are always avoiding that very. And look, so this, I'm avoiding this. I must find something to do to avoid it. Well, us people, in case you don't know, in case you think you're on some sort of a fantasy trip here that's all about enlightenment and wonders and bliss and all the rest of it, and that's why you want to do this. Well, okay, yeah, that's all there. But there's a lot you have to go through in order for that to be your reality, to be your experience. There's something in the way that stops us all from experiencing paradise. And this journey is about, it is a journey. It's about learning to work through all of that for the crock of gold at the end of the path. And that what we're going through is this very thing of self, and this sense of self that's in a permanent state of agitation and fear, that's always shoring itself up, always, never secure, never content, always on the move, always looking, always grasping to give it some sense of reality, going like this. And the fact that it never actually ever pulls it off, shows that actually it's not even real in the first place. That's why it never pulls it off. And it's for us to see the reality of this and see that the major feature of our makeup that we got to deal with, that we got to become alive to, in order to be free, the freedom and the joy, to experience the joy of life, the wonder of life, this amazing experience that we are living in the middle of, that somehow is passing us by. This is what we have to wake up to and see and be willing to work through. And this focus on restlessness really is helping us to see that human condition. We can see, ask yourself why you're on the go the whole time, this sense of restlessness, mental, physical, emotional, on the go the whole time. Why is that? Well, give it attention. And then you can begin to address it. You can begin to see the importance of learning to take control, be the master, not the victim, be the master of your life, of your circumstances, where you're pulled around by everybody and everything. Oh, I can't, somebody wants this, somebody wants that. I can't say no. I'm just, and you're all over the place. And then you blame everybody and everything in your life. And you have become the master. And as I often say, the hardest word for us to say, or the easiest word for us to say in life, is to say yes to things. The most difficult thing is to say no. Learn to say no. No in a kindly way, in a reasoned way, so that you're not being pulled, you're not being the victim, you're not being in a permanent state of agitation, because that's, you don't want to do that anymore. You know that that's very, very unskillful, and you're never going to be free when you're in that permanence, when you're enslaved to everything and everyone in your life. You have to learn to become the master and organise things and put things in their place and learn to say no. And something comes along, no, I'm sorry, I'm too busy, I can't be doing that, no. When you say you're busy, you're being busy doing nothing, because that's what Dharma people aspire to be busy doing nothing. There's a song about that, someone, isn't there? Anyway, I don't know if that's a Dharmic song, but that sentence for us, in the world, that's what you don't do. Busy doing nothing. Oh, you lazy so-and-so. You useless person. But for Dharmic person, that's... You see, everything is completely upside down, don't you? The Dharma and the world are completely opposite. Absolutely opposite. It's unbelievable. Whichever way you look, it's the complete reverse. I say do nothing, of course, you've still got your responsibilities. You've still got to feed yourself and be responsible for whatever you have to be responsible or people you have to be responsible to, and you're like, I'm responsible to yourself. All of these things, of course, still have to be in place. But do you need all this profusion in order to pull that off? That's the question. Can you not hone it down? And I suspect most of the time, yes, you can hone it down. And you can create space where you're with yourself. And what that's dealing with is that you are dealing with restlessness. You're beginning to address that. You're beginning to say, no, I'm not going to be restless. I'm going to be still. Because the opposite of restlessness is stillness. And stillness is the mantra for us people. So that whole subject of restlessness, it's one of the pillars, and it's not a small thing. And we need to look at it, and it does need immense honesty, because it also almost invariably it will bring fear with it. Fear of being more and more on my own. If you're not already experiencing loneliness, which you do, even if you've got a house full of people and kids, and you've got a busy life, you still experience loneliness. So you can't avoid it, whatever your circumstances are. So in some ways, allow it to be, allow it to come to you, because you know that if you're not careful, you're going to be... Sit with it. Learn to sit with it. Don't run away from it. Because you're dealing with the absolute fundamental issue of why life is unsatisfactory. What this is fear. This is fear. And it's... You're right on the... If you can... And it's massively challenging. And you can't pull it off all of the time, but little by little, acknowledge it. Say yes to it. Yes, this is... Acknowledge that this is a big thing in your life. Don't turn away from it and ignore it, but acknowledge that this is what I'm dealing with. And if I get the opportunity to be with myself and not to be busy, not to be diverted, not to be agitated... If I get the opportunity, can I do it? Because I know there's probably going to be some sort of a kickback from this. But be willing to put yourself in the middle of it and sit it out, sit it through. Everything changes. If you don't feed something, it will go into change. It needs the fuel of your reaction to abide in fear. The way that you deal with fear, and that's what this is all about, is that you turn and you face it and you open and you look it straight in the eye, and it's not good, it's not bad, it's not a fight, but you learn to just, as it were, bow your head in the sense that you're now not going to be involved with it, but you're going to leave it and acknowledge it. You see what happens to that fear. You see, if you haven't already seen. You see what happens to that thing, those things that you've run away from all of your life, that you've blocked off by covering it over with. You see what happens to those things. You see the reality of those things that you've run away from, that you've recoiled from. You see the reality. I wrote about it in the first book, and it's my example, because I think it's a very good one of the experience that I had for a time of being pursued by big, terrifying creatures, humanoids, that never really had a clear definition, but nevertheless. And the fear that they engendered, literally frozen, paralysed with fear, that much fear, and just trying to get away from them, push them away, get away, and somehow... And realising that, you know, that this is not the way to deal with them. This is not the way to go beyond these experiences. And to, however difficult, and by golly, difficult of just allowing them to be. And if they want to come, and if they want to harm, and they wanted to harm me, well then, give in to them. Well, okay, I give in, you win. What happens when you give in to your monsters and you just open and allow them to come and what you imagine they're going to do? That's the point. What you've decided they're going to do to you. They've never said what they're going to do, but you've decided. And so you decide to allow them. And then you see what happens when you give in to that. When you turn around and face and say, yes, okay, I'm all yours. Which is what I did in that, and it was such a... It just rips the root. It rips the root out of fear. Rips the root out. I mean, you can't go beyond that. It's that you open, and as I say, from my experience of allowing one of these fellows to come, and I said, "Well, I'm all yours. You kill me, because that's clearly what you're here to do." Towering over me. Putting its hands around my neck. Now I'm going to die. The darkness, being consumed, utterly, utterly consumed by this darkness and by this fear and by this energy. Oh, come on then. I've given in. I'm all yours. This is what you want to do, so I'm letting you do it. And lying, as it happened to be, lying there for some time, 20 minutes or whatever, I don't know what it was, seemed like a long time. Look, you just get on with it. You know, you've done your bit, now just finish me off. And you call its bluff. You've created something. This is my manifest. This is my creation. You're convinced it's coming from outside of you, that it's nothing to do with you, that it's coming to get you. But actually, it's a manifestation of my own stuff that took this form. And you're opening up to it. All your life you've run away from it and reinforced it so that it's got bigger and more terrifying. You've fed it. You've created. I created this. I am the one, I am the creator. And now at last I've decided enough is enough. Although you may not see it in those terms, but just allow it to come and do its business, and then it will show what its true face, what it really is that it's just a creation of your own mind and just a game that's being played, a game that you fall into, that you follow, that you get carried away, but has no reality whatsoever. Your fear has no reality, has absolutely no reality. And yet for you it's the most real thing. This is what you need to see through. And when you see through it, like with this particular experience, this great big, huge, powerful creature melted away, like the snow in the sunshine, melted and was gone. And just seeing and the knowing what it was all about. I've made all of this. I've made something and run away from it. Now I've stopped and I've faced it and I've called its bluff, if you like. Here I am, do your business, then you will see. That's what we do when we learn to be still. We don't run away, we don't block off, we don't agitate, we don't get restless and make ourselves busy. But we learn to just be with our monsters, whatever they may be. Be with them, stay with them, and then you'll see their reality. And when you see their reality, they will go, and they will never, ever come back. And that's dealing with restlessness and how that helps you find that stillness so that you can wake up and see the reality of the world that you create. And everything and everyone in the world is your creation, whoever they may be. So that second pillar is not a small thing. It is massive. And you can identify as a subject, restlessness. Look at your restlessness. It's very mundane. And it's very, very identifiable. There's nothing esoteric about restlessness. It is very seeable. Look at it. Be honest and truthful with it and why you're on the go the whole time. Why your life is so full of doing. And remind yourself that the way beyond suffering to find liberation, your true nature, to open to reality, is to let go of that busyness, that on-the-go thing that we are all the time, that we have to address and make inroads into it. We make inroads when we're on the cushion. We do our best to be still and let go of all the agitation. But we need to do it in our life as well. It is not separate. This is the sitting posture. There's the standing, there's the walking, there's the lying down. The rest of your life, in other words. You can't just put this in a compartment, separate, and expect it to work. And go out there and live your busy, hedonistic life full of chasing after enjoyment and continually one thing after the other and then coming in and go, snap your fingers and expect it all to go. And then to come and find your liberation on the cushion. This is called having your cake and eat it. Or wanting your cake and eat it. You can't do that. So, you know, there's a great message there, I think, you know, and it's one of what this will do to you when you start to meditate, when you start to get a taste of stillness for the first time in your life, you're letting things go. And when you do that, you begin to wake up, you begin to see your life in the round. And great change can take place very, very quickly when you meditate because you're waking up and seeing how you live your life, what you run after, what you get caught up with. But if you see it from the perspective that if I want to break through on the cushion, I've got to be serious in my daily life also. So I have to look at that and I have to hone it. Look at it. This is not about hurting people. If it means stop doing something that's going to have effect on people. Dharma practice is never, if you ever find yourself hurting people with what you consider to be your practice, you look at it very carefully because that is not the Dharma. That does not and cannot do that. If that happens in your life, then you need to question whether what you think is Dharma, whether it is Dharma or not. Look and see what you can do just to let the thing dampen down a bit so you're not such a maniac. Just let it dampen down. Find space in your life. Find time in your life. Create a space in your daily life where you're doing nothing, an hour, 2 hours, where you're doing nothing. See what that feels like. We do it here, 3 hours in the afternoon. I don't know how you're getting on with it. I expect most of you are making yourself busy. You've got plans. Today I'm going to walk over that mountain. Tomorrow I'm going to walk around the lake. And then I'm going to do this and do that. And so you've got this timetable every day. There you are, you're falling straight into it again. Achieving. I know it's a wonderful environment. We all want to soak it up and enjoy it. It's true, but you know, you're here to practice the Dharma. It's not a holiday. You do that when you go on holiday. You make a timetable. And you're active every day if that's what you want to do. And go places and do things that you don't normally do. That's a holiday. If that's part of your holiday. This isn't a holiday. This isn't about sightseeing. Of course we want to stretch our legs and it's lovely to go up. But just watch yourself. That if you're not just making yourself busy when you're off the cushion and achieving. So at the end of the week you can look back and you can tick off all the things that you've achieved when you come here. Well, if this is what you can do in the afternoon. Well, if you do that, then you're missing the point. It's about doing nothing. It's not about achieving anything. Of course exercise and it's fine to walk around. But what's your mental relationship to what you're doing there? Is it, oh, I've got 2 hours, it's a lovely day, I must go and achieve something. This is Dharma. This is a Dharma retreat. And you need to look at it with those eyes. So if it means not doing very much at all, just sitting and pondering, which is what you would normally do when you're on holiday, then that's to be done. And at the end, think, well, that's, you know, you're get a sense of satisfaction but you're engaging with a part of you that you don't normally engage with when you've got space. And you can stay with yourself and experience what it's like to be with yourself when you're not in a mode of being goal-orientated. That's what you try to find. This is what this time in the afternoon is for. Watch your conditioning. Are you just going to follow your normal pattern? Or are you just going to challenge it all? See what it feels like. And if you sit and you feel, it may well evoke this sense of, well, everybody's off enjoying themselves, climbing those mountains and coming back with wonderful stories. And here I am, all on my own, looking in the lake. What does that feel like? Does that feel okay? Or do you feel left out? Do you feel... What does it feel like? Because it's an opportunity to have that sort of experience that you wouldn't have in your daily life. In your daily life, even on weekends when you're not working, Monday to Friday, weekends. You've already got your weekend planned out to do your shopping and your cleaning and to do this and to do that and go see this person and do that. You've already got your weekend planned out. And then you come back to work on Monday and then you follow the pattern through the week. This is what we do. Okay, well, there's, you know, weekend, of course, is a time to let go of all of that. But also have periods where you're not, you know, where it's not all structured and planned and you're going to achieve something and you're going to be with others. Be with yourself and just sit with it and see what it's like. And at the end think, well, God, I haven't achieved anything. What does that feel like? This is dealing with restlessness. And it's taking you right to the heart. When you do, it takes you to the heart of who you are and what this training is about. And it's very, very important. It's not a small thing. And it's something that should be pondered very regularly. It's called checking yourself. Always checking yourself with the training. Always looking at yourself. Am I being skillful? Am I engaging with the Dharma in the correct way? Am I training in the correct way? Always look at yourself and always be not be complacent and just drift on and on and on, day after day, week after week, which I know happens. It's called getting in your comfort zone and not being challenged. Look at that. Check yourself regularly. Am I swinging the lead here? Am I avoiding? Am I just looking for the easiest line of resistance? Or am I really practicing the Dharma? What does that mean? Practicing Dharma means to be aware. That's ultimately what practicing the Dharma means. Your circumstances, neither here nor there. It's being aware. It's being alive to yourself. It's knowing. It's being present in wherever you are. That's what Dharma practice means. And can you pull that off in all situations? If you do, then you're free. Then by all means, do whatever you like. But you'll find that when you reach that place where you have awareness with you, there's so much that you've done in the past you'll have let go of. You will not be following things that you used to be doing. You will have a contentment just to be, without wanting to achieve anything. Just to sit and be will be utter contentment. That's where this will take you. So if you can bring awareness and be alive to all of your feelings, your emotions, to the circumstance, that's called practicing the Dharma. And if you can't pull that off, it means that that's something to be nurtured. And I suspect most of us can't pull that off all the time. Little blocks here and there, may even go days and forget all about this training. Oh yeah, I'm practicing Dharma, aren't I? Sure, I knew there was something. After several days. Well, that's showing that, you know, there's room for improvement there. And it's about, in order to be able to be present, whatever you're doing, not picking and choosing, it's not creating a particular lifestyle, and making all those judgments about things and people and all the rest of it. And that all takes care of itself. It's about being alive to, here I am. I'm walking down the road. I feel like this. I'm in this sort of a mood. I've got these desires. I've got those aversions. Being alive to all of those. That mirror-like quality. That's called practicing the Dharma, so you see. And things will take care of themselves after that. But in order to find yourself in that position, there's got to be stillness. And the reason why we can't be that is because we have all this agitation, this restlessness that's going on all the time. And that's what needs to be tamed. That's what needs to be let go of. Learn to say no to. And then you'll find that place. Everything settles down more and more, and the more things settle down, the more that you'll wake up to where you are in this moment. And you'll be alive to whatever it is. There's no judgments about where you are and what you're doing. But the fact that you can be present and know you are present means that you're not in a state of agitation. Simple. Because that stillness is your natural condition. It will by itself present itself because it's already there. It's just that we cover it over. It's already there. You don't make awareness. You don't make that being present. It's not something that you manufacture. It's something you discover. And you discover when you're still. So the more you can reflect upon your life and look and see what can I do to become the master, to be not be pulled around by circumstances, have the ability to say no, have priority. My priority is to be still as much as life will allow me to be. And then you're dealing with that very deep and important aspect of our makeup, which is called restlessness. So that's what I'd like to offer you today.